AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. There are not many price gains in the commodity world this morning. Even the energy markets are trading lower in a risk-off environment. And Trekkies all over the world are celebrating right now. William Shatner blasted off, hung out above the Kármán line for a few moments, and he completed his mission with a safe return just moments ago.
Live from Wednesday the 13th via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Jordan Fife from BioUrja. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Steve Pitstick and Dennis Bogards. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Man, I tell you what, the legend of Bill Shatner just got bigger today, didn't it?
You gotta love the Shatner. I mean, he just keeps on giving. The guy doesn't stop.
I'm telling you, 90 years old, and he strapped into a rocket and went for a big ride. Now, okay, it's like a 12-minute ride. Think of the G-forces. Think of everything. Think of the weightlessness. Think of there's so much that he experienced that I'm sure, you know, it's obviously it's been a lifelong dream for him, or he wouldn't have done it, right?
I wonder if, I'm assuming this is the case, I wonder if he had time while he was up there to, you know, at least at least make out with some green chick from a different planet. Something. Something.
I really hope. I would really hope that he took a moment, looked at the camera and said, Captain's log, October 13th.
I'm back in space.
The guy is so sharp and witty, you know he probably had a million liners ready to go.
Something, yeah.
This might be some of the most entertaining video ever.
So, well, and he's bested Khan. I mean, Ricardo Montalban isn't up there for sure. You know?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? It is a dark, stormy, gloomy, rainy, windy day in a lot of areas of the middle of the country.
What? Let me rephrase that. From the moment I woke up, I had the most cozy, warm feeling. I just stayed under the quilt for an extra 10 minutes and listened to the rain pitter-patter and the thunder gently rumble through the skies.
Yeah.
What a great, great start to the day.
Right. Hmm? Okay. I believe you. And I get that. And in a lot of cases, hey, it's a break in a busy time of the year for a lot of farmers. But the combination of rain and wind that we've got, even, you know, just gusts to 25, 30 mile an hour, it's going to raise some anxiety out there among growers. You know, they'll get out there and hope that the yield monitor is reading the same as it was before today.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, that's something to watch.
Fair point.
You bet. Man, we've got a good one today. We're going to be talking about the energy markets with Jordan Fife from BioUrja. And then the Farmer Forum, Pitstick and Bogards. Man, good one.
Yeah.
Good one. Let's get going with the news.
Chip, the first winter storm of the season is spreading heavy snow into the northern high plains today, along with high winds. Severe weather and heavy rain over the central plains today will taper off some as they spread into the upper Midwest tonight. Moisture drawn northward from Hurricane Pamela will enhance heavy rain threats across the southern plains by tonight. And Chip, Americans quit their jobs at a record clip in August. Restaurant and hotel workers led the mass exodus. A whopping 4.3 million people quit 2 months ago. That's the most on record dating back to December 2000, and 300,000 more than in July, according to Labor Department report. Meanwhile, a sharp slowdown in jobs growth last month should not stop the U.S. Federal Reserve from beginning to scale back its pandemic-era stimulus program in November. That's according to senior Fed official. Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic told the Financial Times that the labor market has made sufficient gains to allow the central bank to reduce or taper its asset purchase program.
Okay. All right. So at quit their jobs at a record clip in August before we started talking about vaccination mandates.
The mandates, yeah, yep. I think that's very significant.
What do you think the number is going to be in September? What do you think the number is going to be in October?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is a reason that the airlines can't get planes moving around the country, and it's because they don't have people working.
Yep.
And if they're going to this mandate is going to be an issue for the labor market to deal with for a long time.
Well, China imported 6.88 million metric tons of soybeans during September, a 30% drop from the 9.79 million metric tons of the oilseed the country brought in last September, and a 28% drop from August, according to customs data. Meanwhile, China imported 694,000 metric tons of meat in September, a 17% drop from a year ago, and an 8% decline from August, according to customs data. Chip, is this cause for concern?
No, I think it's evidence that something that I've contended for quite a while is wrong. Okay. And I've said for quite a while that China doesn't care what the price of beans are. They'll buy them when they need them.
Mm,
well,
fair enough.
Yeah. But when the price is right, like it was a year ago, they bought more aggressively ahead of a price rise.
Okay.
Now they're sitting back and waiting, anticipating lower prices, and they'll buy more later. So the price matters in when they'll buy. I just don't know yet if it matters in how much they will eventually buy.
Well, the House approved legislation to raise the debt ceiling until early December. That delays the threat of another congressional showdown. Some private analysts predict the increase will give the Treasury enough fiscal resources to cover its obligations until some point between mid-December and early January. Chip, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday said Democrats must prepare for cuts to their budget reconciliation measure, saying, quote, "I'm very disappointed we're not going with the original $3.5 trillion smackers, but whatever we do, we will make decisions that will continue to be transformative." Ag groups have joined the list of those urging no cuts to their sectors. Chip, at present, that bill contains a 10-year boost of $66 billion in funding for ag research, rural development, biofuels, and forestry management programs, and $28 billion for conservation. House Democrats signed a letter to Speaker Pelosi urging that the electric vehicle tax credit remains as is when the chamber takes up the package.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I want to talk with Steve and Dennis about is, okay, do we want to cut the package? And if we do cut that, the Triple B or Green New Deal package, if we do cut that, should ag participate in those cuts?
The White House today is expected to announce a pledge from one of the country's busiest ports to operate around the clock, a move aimed at easing cargo bottlenecks. By going 24/7, the Port of Los Angeles will join the neighboring Port of Long Beach, which started doing the same thing last month. The Biden administration said it was also working with states to accelerate licensing truck drivers, but the shortage has been building for years as older drivers have left the field and fewer younger people have come to replace them. And finally, EPA has sent forward its proposed rule outlining a revised definition of WOTUS, with the proposal showing as being on review at the Office of Management and Budget. Chip.
Can't wait to get to the details of that.
Oh, boy.
And see what it says there. And they finally got to 24/7
at Los Angeles, they're proposing. They're already there at Long Beach, I guess.
How are they not already at 24/7? That is mind-blowing to me. Wow. We got Jordan Fife from BioOrigin next.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number 2 diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number 2. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, and welcome back to Earth William Shatner.
Yes.
He's out of the capsule. He is talking with Bezos.
We have capture. Yes.
It was such an emotional experience for him that it moved him to tears. And he just moments ago delivered a line that I think is fantastic. He just said, "I hope I never recover from this feeling."
Man.
How cool, Bill. Wow. Good for you. Good for you. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis. And let's talk about some energy markets, shall we? Davis,
I think
I know that this has got you all fired up. Jordan Fife is at the Bioergia Group where he runs the trading desk there. Jordan, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you, man?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing real good, real good. So, you a Shatner fan?
Of course. Yeah. I used to always watch Star Trek back in the day. I was Team Shatner, not Picard. I was a little older, so he fell into my camp.
Good deal. Yep. It's pretty interesting to see what's going on. And speaking of what's going on, Jordan, I think we need to go over an evaluation of how we've gotten to where we're at in these energy markets again. What have you seen that's pushed us to $5 plus natural gas? What have you seen that has pushed us to $80 crude?
Yeah, so I think for the natural gas portion of it, you have to start in Europe. And when you look at Europe, there's a lot of things at play right now. But the biggest one that I'm focused on is what Gazprom is doing, and that's the Russian oil magnate. And basically what's happening is they have a monopoly on the pipeline over there, and they're able to pump as much or little into Europe as they please. People believe that there's two trains of thought as to why they're doing what they're doing. One is because they don't have enough supply in Russia to supply both the Russian demand and Europe. And the other is there's a pipeline called the Nord Stream 2 that they think they might try to be pressured to bring it online. The pressure in Germany to bring it online. And so if you look at 538 natural gas, that was what it was right when I walked off the desk to take this call in the United States. That seems really expensive, and it is. But when you look at Europe, it's like $22. It's crazy. And so it's pulling it up, you know, and it's pulling it up right now. And then for the crude side of things, it's very interesting. You know, a lot of people are calling this the revenge of fossil fuels. But as banks became very focused on green energy, and they piled a lot of money into that, they stopped piling money into crude and to exploration and into drilling wells, et cetera. It kind of became like, you know, the new tobacco in banks. And they were like, well, we don't want to do that. We want to do more green energy. And so as prices have surged, as demand has come back post-COVID, we're just not seeing the increase in wells. We're not seeing the increase in production at refineries. They're just not able to do so. So you just have this price versus demand, and demand is currently winning. We're not able to get the funding we used to. So you've had a huge increase in both. And then if you want to tie that back into, you know, something that I focus a lot on, ethanol, that goes back to the nat gas part. Nat gas is about 35% of the capital expenses at an ethanol plant. You know, the other obviously would be corn. So that's going to be a big factor going into winter for a lot of these plants who buy on a month-to-month basis. They don't lock in, and they've been lulled to sleep by $2 something natural gas for years. It was always just going to be cheap. And now it's, you know, over double the price of what they're used to paying.
Jordan, roll us back to that discussion of that Russian pipeline quickly, because I'm having a hard time getting my head around. Is that an ongoing project? Is it completed? They just need to turn it on. What's the status of the physical infrastructure with that?
It's approved and launched. It's there. As far as I've read and everything like that, it has been completed from everything I've read, and it can pump like 55 billion cubes into the European market. And they're currently not. You know, I think Europe gas, when I checked it last, they were like 75% full. And if you look at the averages, they're usually about 95% full right now going into winter. And, you know, if you look at Europe, there's a lot of really cold places, you know. There's a lot of places that are eating. And Putin's come out multiple times and said, you know, he's going to help. And we joke on the trade floor that, yeah, he'll help if you pay him. You would think with the surging price that if he was able to help, he would do so. So that first train of thought, is he doing it because they really don't have the supply? Gazprom is maxed. They can't increase anymore. But if they happen to just find some natural gas in his back pocket in the next week or two, well, yeah, it looks like they have a supply. Or, like I said, he's pressuring to get this Nord Stream 2 up and running and moving natural gas into Europe, which would make Europe even more dependent on gas.
Yes.
Okay. So what does this all mean for demand going forward? And you know where I want you to end up on this is, what does it all mean for ethanol demand going forward?
So ethanol, you know, like I said, it is 35% roughly of CapEx on any given plant. And so the way, you know, Econ 101, the way my simple brain works is, right now, if natural gas prices are going to go up, it has to be passed along the consumer. If it cannot be passed along the consumer, meaning the prices have to go up and reflect that, or not necessarily the prices, as corn is down 15 cents when I walked off the desk, the flat price is irrelevant, the crush spread would have to increase. But the thing about that, the crush spread when I walked off the desk, it's almost 50 cents right now on the board. So ethanol plants are making great money right now. Corn basis is broken in a lot of places as harvest goes on. But if it cannot be passed along and the prices at the customer is paying do not reflect it and do not benefit the crush spread, eventually ethanol plants would have to slow down, possibly shut. And if that happens over time, well, then the crush spread again will go back up. It has to flow through. And if it doesn't, people have to slow down.
Okay. What, when you hear the White House say something like, we will closely monitor the cost of energy, what's your reaction to that, Jordan?
Frankly, I laugh. there's not a lot of levers they can pull. You know, they can try to sell some of the strategic reserves, which they've already done. And China's tried to do that. You know, China sold some of their strategic reserves of oil. Everyone can sell strategic reserves until you have no more left to sell. Again, it really comes down to if people want to invest in these things in oil and gas and stuff like that. Pipelines are, you know, it's a taboo subject at this point. It's almost impossible to get a pipeline project passed in the United States these days. So we're kind of limited as to what, you know, the United States government can do. But, you know, there's plenty of banks out there that if they want to start reinvesting in oil and gas because it's profitable, which it is, then these high prices will fix high prices. You know, free markets, I'm always a fan of, you know, government overreach on, and again, I'm not a very political person. I'm really not, you know, left or right. I'm not defending either one, but there's just not a lot the United States government can do, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in complete agreement on that. Okay. So, back to the ethanol, I want to take it down to corn demand. Yesterday, USDA put that corn for ethanol number at 5.2 billion bushels. Does that number make sense to you going forward?
I still think it's a little low. I get kind of why they're doing it. When you look at ethanol production, the last one that printed was 978. That's the lowest level since 2020. And 2020 was a weird year, we can all agree. Yep. But when you look at it, 2019, the average production for this time of year was 1066. 1018, or 2018, it was 1011. 2017, it was 1032. 2016 was 1028. That's an average of 1034. So we're well below that. However, as we just talked about, we are a huge ethanol crush spread of 50 cents. That's pretty irregular for ethanol. A lot of times it's negative and flat, you know, maybe 5 or 10 cents, but it's a big number. So if you can make ethanol right now, you should be. That being said, we lost some plants, you know, during the pandemic that are probably not going to come back. A lot of destination type plants like Camilla, Georgia, which was owned by Flint Hills. They shut it down. They don't have plans to reopen. Valero just had an announcement that they've let go of like 61 of 70-something employees at Jefferson, Indiana. Pinal, which is in Arizona, has shut. GPRE shut down Hopewell, Virginia, and dismantled it. Wow. So we've lost some production, but I still think overall we're probably going to be closer to like a 1020 to 1050 kind of range going forward, if margins hold. And if you do that math, you're probably closer to 5.3, maybe 5.4 on the corn. So I think the USDA is a little bit low, but I understand their methodology.
Okay. I've only got about 45 seconds left. What are you hearing on the RVOs, the renewable volume obligations? When are they coming?
You know, it was supposed to be a couple weeks ago, and I've got some contacts that are reporters, and it looked like it was a done deal when those numbers got leaked. And then for whatever reason, they took another meeting and it seems to have slowed everything down. So I honestly do not know when they'll come out. I'd be shocked if we made it through November without something coming out. But that's a long time between now and November. Maybe in the next month and a half, you'll have a final number finally.
All right. Good stuff, Jordan. Hey, man, it is always, always good to talk with you on AgriTalk about what's going on in these energy markets. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me. You guys have a great day.
You bet. Jordan Fife, he runs the trading desk there for BioErgia Group. We got to know Jordan a couple of years ago through Twitter, but it's when the RIN market was going crazy, and he's become a go-to guy for us on AgriTalk, no doubt about it. Okay, when we come back, we're going to get this Farmer Forum started. Steve Pitstick and Dennis Bogart's next.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, yesterday after the report when corn lost about a dime, I said, you know what, that seems a little harsh based on those numbers. Well, take another 14, 15 cents off the market today. Wow.
Yeah, the corn market's definitely leading us down on fund liquidation. So they're getting out of long positions. We dropped through the 20-day moving average that really accelerated the decline this morning. The sell-off in corn is leaking over into the soybean market, and soybeans tried to work to the upside on corrective trade, but that's gone here at mid-morning, and they're trading moderately lower. The meal market's lower, and soy oil's trading to the upside, so soy oil's trying to pull beans up, but the pressure from corn is more than offsetting that at the moment.
Well, that pressure has gotten into the wheat market too, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We're facing the steepest losses actually in the winter wheat markets, trading around 20 cents lower here mid-morning. Spring wheat futures just shy of a dime lower. So definitely, pretty much across the grain and soy complex, yep, aside from soy oil.
Yep. Hard to imagine this disconnect between corn and feeder cattle right now.
Yeah, they have been trading on most days, the reverse of each other. But with corn under heavy pressure, we still have feeders slightly lower, moderately lower in some of the back end contracts this morning. And so there is a disconnect today. Live cattle futures, they're trading slightly lower as well. Still waiting on the active cash cattle trade to develop. So no real good signals yet on that. And then the hog market just continues to bleed here on this pullback.
Yeah, we're working on, I believe this will make 8 out of the last 9 days to the downside. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We're going to get this Farmer Forum started here in just a moment. Just a reminder that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement and its sponsors, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, American Farmland Trust, Certis Biologicals, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, National Association of Conservation Districts, NCGA, National Pork Board, Nutrien and Nutrien Ag Solutions, Sanderson Farms, Simpson Pass, Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum Checkoff Program, and Valent USA. You can learn more about it at www.agweb.com/ACAM. All right, let's get it going. Steve Pitstick from Illinois. Welcome back to the Farmer Forum, man. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Chip. It's a beautiful day here, waiting for the rain.
Yeah.
So, another rainy day.
It hasn't gotten to you yet?
No, it's about 50 miles away, so it's okay. An hour or two away. So,
well, thanks for making time for us this morning, Steve. Appreciate that. Dennis Bogard's in Iowa, South Central Iowa. The rain's gotten to you, hasn't it, Dennis?
Yeah, it hit this morning, real early this morning, and we got a nice little shower. We've been really dry, so I don't mind a rain day, but it is nice this time of year to keep going, but it is nice to have a day to work on the little equipment and talk to you. So
yeah, I'm glad that you're here, man. Glad you're here. Let's start with the crop report before we get to the conversation that we just had with Jordan and the energy markets. I think I want to start with the crop report. Dennis, what do you got going down there around Pella?
We finished up soybeans last week, Friday, I guess, Saturday. Saturday, we finished up soybeans and, had a really good soybean crop this year. And we're about 25-30% done with corn. So it's going good. Corn's dry. We're just throwing it a bin, not having to dry it. And it's going pretty good this year. So overall, very pleased with the crops. So
good. Good, man. With the price of propane, natural gas, you want to stay away from that dryer as much as you can this year, right?
Yeah, that's right. When the guys came to fill the tank here a while back, a couple weeks ago, I said, well, you can fill it, but I don't know how much of it I'm going to use this year. And because we had combined just a tiny little bit, and I was like, man, I just don't plan on hardly burning any LP, which is really, really nice with the price of it. So
Darn right. Okay.
Yeah.
Pit stick, what are you seeing over there around in northern Illinois?
Chip, things are looking pretty good. Most of us are happy. On the yield side, we're about 75% done with soybeans. Real good crop, not the best ever, but probably second best. Corn, maybe 20% done. A really good crop. Some fields, maybe the best ever. Overall, probably second best ever. So we're in pretty good shape here. Makes up for 2019.
Yeah. So when you saw that increase in the soybean yield, the national soybean yield that was delivered yesterday, Steve, you probably said, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't surprised. I didn't want to see that. I may be a little too long. I'm a farmer and bullish. But, it is what it is. It's not surprising. It wasn't a shocker.
Right. Right. Dennis, I can't imagine it was to you either.
Yeah, no. When that came out, I was like, well, yeah, that's about what we're seeing out here. And guys that I hear around here kind of shake their head and say, well, don't know how we grew this soybean crop being this dry, but we did. So I it wasn't a shocker. And like Steve said, kind of wishing would have pulled the trigger on a few more of them after seeing that and having the realization, but we knew it was coming. We just didn't, some of us just didn't do it. So,
Yeah. So they've got, I think everybody kind of expected a record bean yield out of Illinois, and they've got one in there at 64 bushel per acre, but Dennis, they've got a record bean yield in for Iowa now. Even with those rains that started the third week of August, I have no idea how we made 61 bushel or we're making 61 bushel in the state, but it seems to be the case. It's crazy. Okay. Let's jump forward now to 22 crop. And Steve, I would assume that you've been pushing the pencil, and we talked about this, the energy prices, and the one thing that we didn't talk about was the impact of natural gas prices on nitrogen production. And basically what we've got going on are producers around the world that are dealing with higher natural gas prices than we are here in the States have decided it's time to fill up the reserves, the stocks, build stocks ahead of winter in case we do get some cold temperatures, and they've shut off nitrogen production, Steve. And good gosh, we basically doubled nitrogen costs for 2022 crop, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I think back and over most of my career, December, January, you put a plan together, talk to the retailer, get your fertilizer bought. It shows up sometime, you know, chemicals, whatever shows up in the springtime, no big worry. This year, it's a total different deal. We were buying nitrogen in August and September, got most of our commitments made for next spring, hoping it's was up, but it's committed. We can't get a bid now for anything if we wanted more nitrogen for spring. We were buying chemicals in August and September, trying to just, I wanted physical possession with the supply chain issues, just making sure we have stuff. So it's a different world out there for sure.
Man, oh man. What about you, Dennis? What's your situation? Have you got stuff booked up?
Yeah, pretty much the same situation as Steve. We were buying, you know, PK and N, you know, in August and September, and got, I didn't get 100% of my N bought, but, we got a lot of it bought, and, actually more than we normally do in the fall. And I probably got possession of, about, I don't know, 70-80% of the chemical needs, for sure. The ones that my chemical supplier said were going to be hard to get. And, you know, so we got most of the chemicals sitting in the shop, here. Okay. With, you know, by the way, I have a security system, so if anybody's thinking they need to come and find something, you know, it's tight as this could be. You don't always want to admit to having that stuff. So,
right.
But it's just, it's a crazy year. You know, I mean, we did this a number of years ago buying inputs and, you know, I remember one year buying inputs for the next year in like July, I think, July and August. And so, you know, we've done it before, but don't like having to do it like this. But it just kind of seems like it's the times we're in. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I'll start with Steve on this one. Every time I ask somebody, you know, an economist type, a university type, they all say that the input costs on corn should move acres away from corn to soybeans in 2022. I talk to farmers, I talk to co-op people, and I get kind of a different answer, and that is we're locked into rotations, and it's going to be hard to break them out of those rotations. Steve, which is right?
Yeah, I think the farmer sentiment is just to keep doing what you're doing. It all averages out over time. Most of us don't like planting soybeans on soybeans. The corn on corn thing is getting to be more of a challenge every year with rootworm resistance. So we just kind of stick to what works and live through it. And at the end, it usually turns out pretty good.
Okay, Dennis, your situation, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm, you know, we were pretty heavy corn for a number of years, and the last two, I think I've been backing off my corn on corn acres a little bit, just because we were so heavy corn and just also because of rotation and fields and, you know, lost a farm and a few different things. So I am backing off on corn just a little bit, but, yeah, not a terrible lot. Really, I'm more of kind of sticking with the rotation that I want and will pay for it. Corn has seemed to work well for me, but yeah, definitely not changing it drastically anyway.
Gotcha.
At this point. So,
gotcha, Dennis. We talked about how strange of a year it has been in Iowa. What did you learn about growing corn and soybeans that you're going to take with you for next year?
Yeah, I was thinking about this one, and I learned that we can grow soybeans without rain in August, but I don't know that helps me down the road a whole lot, other than it eases my concern sometime in August. But, you know, just, you know,
will that influence your marketing decisions going forward if we do have another dry year?
You know, and the weird thing is we've had dry years in August before, and it hasn't resulted in these kind of yields. So it's one of those things where you just kind of look at it and go, what happened? Why did we get it this year, but we haven't always in the past? And, you know, if somebody can answer that question, why soybeans are doing what they're doing this year when we haven't been able to do that. I know soybeans kind of like dry, but they really like a little bit of moisture in August. And we right here just got almost no moisture in August. You know, we got a little bit late and it seemed to be too late, but obviously it wasn't. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thought and trying to figure out what to do. So,
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, the genetics that we are putting out there in the field, but it's the management side of things too. I've always made that argument. You cannot ignore what's going on with genetics. You can't ignore it, but you also have to give respect to the management that you guys are putting into those crops. And that's a big part of it. And I think guys just did everything they could to grow every bushel of corn and soybeans. They had the incentive out there this year. No doubt about that. Okay. We need to ask Steve that same question when we come back. What did you learn about growing corn and soybeans in 2021 that you're going to take to the 2022 crop? We'll do that next on the Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello.
And we have got the Farmer Forum going today. It is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Check it out, www.agweb.com/ACAM. On the Farmer Forum, Steve Pitstick from Illinois, Dennis Bogards from Iowa. And Steve, we're talking about what you learned from growing corn and soybeans in 2021 that you're going to use again next year. What was that?
That's a good question. You know, I've got 45 1-year experiences.
Yeah.
Each year is just a little bit different. This year we had a drought. We were a D2 drought by the middle of June here in northern Illinois. Things were looking pretty tough, but with that, we were able to plant everything. We were done planting everything on the 2nd of May. I think it's the earliest we've ever been done. Crops got off to a good start. A lot of seed companies want to take credit for the genetics, but I think we're doing a really good job of managing that stuff on the farm. Better planter systems, better tillage, planting earlier, especially the soybean crop, much more time for it to reproduce when you're planting earlier. Just a lot of things we're doing different overall.
Yeah, absolutely. There certainly is. You've got another responsibility that you just started, the newly elected chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association, right?
Yes, sir. That's
good for
exciting,
you.
Exciting job. I really look forward to it. Just trying to make a difference out here.
Yeah. What's on your priority list?
Probably the biggest thing is just this soybean oil thing. You know, where we go with that? The soybean oil, we've been pushing biodiesel for 30 years almost. We're starting to get some good traction on that with the administration going on now. Everybody's focused on climate change. That's part of the solution. Really paying attention to this West Coast low carbon fuel standards and the renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel. That could be a huge potential market for soy oil because of the just the good supply, the supply that we can supply that market. So looking at that, looking at this infrastructure bill, there's a lot of parts of it that I don't like, but we need infrastructure spending in this Midwest, locks, dams, bridges, all that stuff. We need upgrades. So we're focused on that. And then seeing what comes in the climate bill. We just don't know. It's 2,500 pages of stuff, but not really knowing what the details are and how they may affect us positively or negatively going forward.
Yeah, unfortunately, it feels like another one of those bills that's going to have to pass before we know what's really in it. That's an unfortunate and uncomfortable place to be, man.
Very, very.
Yeah, yeah. Dennis, you've been involved with Soybean Association, state and national level for many years. It's got to be rewarding to see the what feels like we're right on the edge of a domestic demand explosion.
Yeah, it sure does. I think there's a lot of demand out there and a lot of usage that's going to be great for our industry. And but we do need infrastructure to make this all work too. And then I was thinking about it before I got on the phone. When I started with the Soybean Association, probably about 13 years ago, I remember talking about waterways and locks and dams and they had passed a bill to help fix those up, but that bill never got funded. And you know, 13 years later, here we are still talking about it. And so something's got to get done in that matter. So to help out with that demand. So.
Right. Yeah. The growth or the potential growth in this, the low carbon fuel standard driven demand growth out there. I think it's something that we're going to watch really closely. Okay. Now on the Green New Deal, the Build Back Better plan, whatever they are calling it today, $3.5 trillion. It sounds like it's going to be cut and cut dramatically if it's going to have any chance of passage. There are some of those things in there, like the $28 billion for conservation efforts in there, Steve. Should ag participate in any of those cuts or leave it alone?
Yeah, I just got to see what it is and what they're looking at proposing. You know, we've heard the $28 billion number, but not knowing exactly what that entails. Is it carbon credits? Is it part of building out that system? What is it exactly? You know, I don't know what to cut if I don't know what I have to start with.
Yeah. Yep. That's a fair point. And it's such a fair point that it kind of ends that part of the conversation. Because if we don't know exactly how it's going to be used, you don't know if you should support cuts to it or not. Dennis, what are you thinking about in the combine this fall?
Oh, you know, it's a lot of what's going to happen next year and what the plan's going to be and, you know, and equipment wise and what's going to be available to, you know, to buy or to, you know, to look at, for equipment. You know, equipment demand is so high right now and prices on equipment is so high. It's like, do you want to spend the money on it right now? Or is it kind of sit back and wait and see what these input prices do? Cause you know, that could, you know, potentially eat up a lot of profit that we thought we maybe were going to have too. So, it's kind of building a plan in my head and trying to decide where I'm going to go with that plan for next year is kind of where I'm at this point.
Yeah. Big Iron's probably keeping you pretty busy this fall, isn't it?
Yeah. It's starting to pick up a little bit and, just went and talked to a guy about selling a couple pieces of equipment and, I think it's going to be as soon as the guys get out of the field, I think it's going to get pretty hot, pretty fast. So, it's a really interesting industry right now and never dreamt that, you know, equipment would be moving, as much as it is. So it's crazy.
Right. Only about 30 seconds left here, Steve. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, kind of the same stuff. Just looking at equipment upgrades that we usually go through, what's going to be available. What do we need to get better? Looking at some of the trouble spots this year, rootworm resistance, corn on corn problems. Just try to figure out how to do it better next year.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff, you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time and being part of the conversation today on the Farmer Forum. Steve Pitstick over in Illinois. Thanks, man.
Hey, thank you, Chip. Always a pleasure.
You bet. Dennis Bogard's in Iowa. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Chip. Always enjoy it.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you, guys. And thank you for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon at 2:06 Central. We're going to break down the crop production supply and demand reports with Rich Nelson from Allendale right here on AgriTalk.